We switch gears, talk a little CFL. Farhan Lalji from TSN and TSN in Vancouver joins us. Farhan, welcome back to the show, my man. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm excellent. Are you a big Olympic guy? And if so, any favorite sports you like to watch?
Yeah, I'm a bit of an Olympic guy. My favorite is by far track and field. I've always been big on that. You know, like PEDs aside, I've just found it as a sport, it's kind of the essence of the Olympics, right, in terms of that purity of or simplicity of competition, right? Purity might not be the right word, but, you know, with everything else that's going on, I enjoy watching it. There's no doubt about it. It's a lot of fun.
Now, I know you're a huge fan of football in general. The CFL, the Edmonton Eskimos, give me your thoughts on, they're a team, they're 2-4. Now, people say, well, they've only beaten Winnipeg and Saskatchewan. Well, Winnipeg actually has more wins than the Eskimos now. And then they've lost to Ottawa twice, once in overtime, once late in the game. They imploded versus Hamilton. This team right now is just, very inconsistent. But what concerned you about their play offensively last week? We really hadn't seen many red flags from their offense other than inconsistency until that game where their O-line got manhandled.
Well, see, I just don't think their O-line's very good, and I say this in one breath. I think they've got more depth of Canadian O-linemen, coming into the free agent process. When Ed Hervey didn't get a lot of O-linemen, I said, they're probably the one that can afford it because they've got about 9 guys that have some, ability to play, but they don't necessarily have that high-end guy. And so I think that's what we're seeing a bit, that they're kind of getting exposed for the lack of depth. 1-5, truthfully, I don't think their offensive line's in the top half of the league. And you're seeing Mike Riley getting hammered. And even on weeks where they were able to move the ball, he was very rarely clean. He was getting hammered on a regular basis. This is not the first game you've seen him go to the sidelines and throw a helmet or express frustration, right? So I think they've got bodies, but they've kind of got a whole lot of average there. So I think that is, if that continues and Justin Sorensen's out and Beard is playing and he was a guy that kind of got fast-tracked a little bit last year, right, given where he was picked in the draft. If these guys are going to get heavy, heavy minutes, I think you're going to see a little more of this. They've got to hopefully get some guys healthy and get them back or find a way to address it. But right now, the way they're going up front, I would be surprised if Mike Riley lasted the season.
Interesting. Well, the injury to Sorensen really seemed to hurt their team, maybe more than people expected, because it moved Rotiro out of the guard position to center.
Well, that's the thing. And Rotiro, over the last couple of years, since he got called out by Ed Hervey that time, has really become an improved player and has become a key to that line. And you always hate a situation where one change forces two, right? Whether it's in the secondary or the offensive line, especially, where chemistry is so important, and Justin's really, really improved as a player since he got to Edmonton. He was run out of BC. Things didn't work out the way they wanted in Winnipeg. And, he's got a level of confidence and he's smart, right? So I know in BC, the question on him was his physicality for a big man. It wasn't there. Well, that part of his game has evolved to a point where it's acceptable, but he's really found a home at the center spot in terms of being able to make blocking calls and just kind of take care of what he needs to do, between those A gaps, as opposed to trying to necessarily play out of his shoes a little bit. So the fact that it's a key position for chemistry and the fact that it's caused two changes has hurt them.
Farhan Lalji joined us. What did you make of Henry Burris, who was pretty fired up in that game against Ottawa, at least in his interviews?
Didn't like it. I'm a fan of Hank, really a fan of Hank. I think he's a good guy, and I think he has gotten the short end of the stick at various stops along his career. And he wears that. I recall talking to him off camera with a bunch of our TSN guys during the Grey Cup that Hamilton played in, his last year in Hamilton, and he was, having an MOP-type season then, and we all knew that it just wasn't going to work out for him long term. He and Kent Austin did not see eye to eye on some things, and Kent wanted to move past him and get to the next guy, which was Zach Collaros. And even then, he knew the writing was on the wall because they just weren't making a commitment to him. And here he's got them in the Grey Cup. So he carries that as a chip on his shoulder, and whatever little criticism he's gotten here. I mean, look, last year in Hamilton, in Ottawa, it was a Henry Burris love fest. We couldn't stroke him any more than we did. And now all of a sudden, he's got a few negative comments, and he's got to think thin skin about it. And I talked to Milt Stegall on a show I hosted this morning, and Milt said that was predetermined because you just got by what he said and how he said it. Like Matthew Shinetti didn't even ask him about, you know, any struggles he'd been having. It was a very generic question, and he made every point of going there. You could tell going into that interview, which meant going into that game, he wanted to go there and make that statement. And when that's the case, where's your focus? Right? Like, why are you not thinking about football? Why are you thinking about what you need to say? I don't believe that was a heat of the moment thing. If you listen to the question, look at it all, he went going into it, I've got this to say. I've got this agenda. I'm going to get it off my chest. And even post-game, he didn't step back from it at all. And by doing that, he made it about him. And that's what I don't like. I got a lot of respect for Henry Burris, but I think whether he felt that way or not, that's not the issue. That was not the time or place to bring that out.
Well, the one thing that I loved is the fact that he didn't step back from it in postgame, because too often guys will say something like, oh, you know, geez, I was taken out of context. No, I didn't mean that. I love the fact that, and we can all disagree with what he says, he's entitled to his opinion. Obviously, if his focus wasn't there, it didn't impact him because, you know, they won the game. And for Henry Burris, proud player, we're allowed to give our opinions as media. I don't mind it when a player stands up every now and then in that one. The only thing I thought he probably didn't say right was when he said, well, you know what, I rebuilt for it. If he just would have said, hey, where I've been, we've been highly competitive, that would have been good enough.
It was a lot of I, and that's what I'm saying. He made it about himself, right? There was, I've been there, I've helped rebuild, or I've led the rebuild, or whatever it was a lot of I. And again, he was making the focus about me as opposed to about the team in that scenario. So, like I said, he went into it with an agenda, which meant he had to own it after, right? So that was good. He didn't step away from it. You're right. And I don't mind him feeling that way, but I will say this. He's an athlete that is using the media to manufacture motivation. Right, there's no way around that. That's what he's doing. I recall Doug Baldwin in Seattle a couple of years ago, and he went off during a playoff game. You guys said this. You guys said that. Pedestrian receiving core. This. You know, never mind the fact it was not like some media guy like me that didn't play in the league. It was Chris Carter, who was a Hall of Famer, that said it. And then a couple of days later, when he was asked about it, he admitted that I have to play with a chip on my shoulder, and I need to do whatever I can to create that chip. It wasn't legitimate. He decided to create his own fuel and use something a media member said to get it going. And that's what Henry's done here. He's got the chip on his shoulder. He's always had it, or at least later in his career, he's certainly had it. And he needs that to keep him going. He manufactured this situation, because the reality is, for 2 years, it has been a Henry Burris love-in on TSN. And that guy wants to be on the TSN panel. I've had the discussion with him and his agent. He wants to be on the TSN panel. So, you know, I don't know how that's going to impact that part of it, but this was contrived completely, in my opinion.
Farhan Lali joins us, and yeah, it's hard to argue with that one for sure. Looking, around the league, the BC Lions, outside of their 15-hour flight delay home, that was really the only bad thing about that trip. Are you surprised how well they're playing this season with Wally Bono wearing both hats again?
Not really. I'll be truthful with you, and I know this is going to sound like a homer comment, but keep in mind that a year ago at the draft, going into the season and through the season, I was real consistent with my lack of belief in what was going on there, and I could show it to you in writing. And before this season, when my good friend Gary Lawless asked for our predictions, I put in writing, I expected the Lions to come out of the West. And I know that you're going to raise your eyebrows and say, what? But I felt that Calgary and Edmonton were going to take a step back because of the poor job Edmonton did defensively in terms of their personnel, in terms of rebuilding and restocking from the guys that they lost. They did nothing to replenish the defensive side of the ball. And there were a number of people that were missing in Calgary as well. So I just thought those teams would come back to the pack a little bit. And the Lions didn't make any revolutionary moves, but they addressed and targeted specific areas of need, and they did it with second-level free agents, but guys that were starters in the Canadian Football League. And so, you know, they needed some help, along the defensive line. They needed some help in the secondary. There were specific guys, whether it was a Mike Edom or a Bryant Turner to be a depth guy, you know, people that they went out and targeted. And it allowed them to improve. And then they hit on a couple of off-the-street free agents, right, like Alushez Purifoy and a couple of those guys. The first three games, they did it without Jonathan Jennings being a factor. He was just a 5 out of 10, 6 out of 10 player, not hurting them, but not taking games over. And now he's the Jennings I kind of thought he might become coming into the season. So when you add all of that up, throw in a certain amount of accountability that Wally Buono has created. You know, he's made them accountable, but he's also treated them like men, which Jeff Tedford didn't do a year ago. I'm not surprised that they're 4-2. I don't think they're head and shoulders above anybody. I just think they're as good as the Calgarys and Edmontons, to the point where on any given day they can beat those teams. And they beat Calgary once, lost to them once, and it'll continue like that once Edmonton's defense, or if Edmonton's defense catches up, right? So that's kind of where I think they are. I just think that, you know, those two teams, Calgary and Edmonton, were a 9 out of 10 a year ago. Right now they're 7. BC was a 5 out of 10, and they've gone up to 7. So I'm not totally shocked.
Farhan Lalji from TSN and TSN 1040 in Vancouver joins us. Farhan, I know you cover the NFL as well. You watch a lot of the Canadian players. Any young Canadians you expecting to make an impact south of the border this year in the NFL?
Not necessarily impact guys, but I mean, I certainly think that you know, the guys that are there are going to continue to keep their roster spots, whether it's a guy like, you know, Austin Pastor, who, you know, I'm sure the Eskimos would love to see back along their offensive line. You know, I talked to him down in Cleveland, and, you know, he was spending a lot of time working with the first units, and, you know, the Stephen Charles and the Christian Covington. Christian's going to probably take the next step to starting as opposed to being a rotational guy. He's expected to go in and start for the defensive line in Houston. You know, David Onyemata, from what I've heard, the first week in camp has been very good. So I think all those guys are going to hold their own. I don't know that there's any guy that all of a sudden we're going to be raising our eyebrows and saying, hey, that guy's going to be an all-pro tomorrow. But, you know, I think those guys are going to be there for a while.
And what's your thoughts? You know, there's been a lot of people. I talked about it last year. Gary Lawless brought it up again. Do you think there's any conversation to be had about the ratio change in the CFL, or at least along the offensive line? The league wants to protect quarterbacks. The best way to protect them is have more competent O-line.
Yeah, you know, and Gary talked about this, that, you know, the starting Canadian O-linemen, by and large, like the guys that get to their second contract,
are
getting them.
They're legit.
They're legit, but it's the depth guys and the guys you're forced to play early, right? That, you know, that you're kind of holding your breath with a little bit. And that's the concern. I'll tell you what I would do with the ratio. I would mandate how many you can play on each side of the ball. Okay, because then you can't go 5 import offensive linemen. I don't like the targeted positions. The first thing I would do is I would say you can't have more than 5 on the offense, and I would work that eventually to 4. Okay, force them to play some Canadians at certain spots on the defensive side of the ball. That might open up offense a bit more, but also it's going to prevent teams from just loading up imports on the offensive line, because, you know, you want to protect quarterbacks. Now, again, some of these injuries, if you break them down, they're kind of innocuous, fluky contact plays.
Sure.
It's not all, you know, that a guy's getting pummeled like Mike Riley's getting over and over and, you know, in a repeated beatdown. But that's how I would do it. Like, I don't like teams that are allowed to go 6-1, you know, and some teams have even tried at certain points to go 7-0 and play 12 imports on defense. I think that needs to change. And, you know, find a way to kind of even out the ratio a bit rather than reducing the number of Canadians. I do believe the ratio is important to this league, and I do believe you need some of them on the field. And for the most part, the guys that are starting in the league in those spots, you know, they've had to pay their dues. They've had the extra development time. You know, I'd like to see that happen. And the other thing I'd like to see is I'd like to see the quarterbacks be part of the ratio, you know, rather than separating them, because I think that's hurting the development of Canadian quarterbacks. So if I could make 2 ratio changes, those are the ones I'd make.
Farhan, always great to talk football with you. Appreciate it.
Anytime, Jason. Take care.